Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. ebaymotors.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, welcome everyone to The Distraction here on Fightful.com. I am Jeremy Lambert, still celebrating my birthday because I can. Joined, as always, by the man in the corner, Joe Holbert. Joseph, how are you?
I'm very good, Jeremy. This is going to be a stacked show. We've just spent 4 hours going through production here. There's so much to get to, so many news bulletins to tackle. I'm just ready. I want to get straight into it this week. I know normally we, you know, a little bit of fun here and there, some silliness. No. This week, there is some serious stuff to discuss.
Plenty of wrestling to discuss this week. This is where we are heavy on the wrestling this week. If you want more of our wrestling banter, we actually reviewed a wrestling movie this past Tuesday, a live show at that, our first ever, our second ever live show, maybe our last ever live show. We reviewed Firefly Funhouse, all the segments since last year when they started. I reviewed it as one big movie. Joseph actually tried to review it as wrestling segments. You can decide which approach you liked best on that, but I thought we had a good time on that show.
We did. It was certainly, you know, there's very few times in this industry, Jeremy, and we are very, very revered in our field here. We understand that, right? We have big voices. But there are very few times you can honestly finish a recording and say, we have just done something that no one else in the world has done. And I confidently will say that we did that. Not just watching it, but then doing like a contrasting approach review of it. I mean, in 20 years when they make a documentary about this show, they will discuss that episode. They'll say that was when we realised these guys are something different. And next week's show too, but that's a topic for later. Yes.
The live show is so weird to do because I've got to like read the chat and the super chats, and I'm getting texts from my mom and stuff. I actually went back and like watched it again. You know, I got to study the game, you know, Joe, you got to always keep improving, always keep learning. I went back and watched it, and like just when the chats are coming in and you're talking, because we're so used to just doing this where it's not live at all. And I'm trying to like fill in bits of when people are messaging me. When usually we just ramble on about whatever topic or movie we're reviewing.
It's hilarious because to me it's the exact same show. Like it makes no...
Yeah.
The only difference is I get off and I'm just like, oh, people have already seen it. That's weird. Like, for you, you're actually trying to like... It's truly point God moments for you, right? Truly ball in the hands, shot clock running stuff. So, no, you did very well. I mean, especially on your big day, right? More pressure than ever. Didn't want to foul on your big day. I think you succeeded. I mean, there's been some... The reviews are mixed, right? It's fair to say, because the live format, not everyone is the biggest fan, because when you're dealing with artists of our level, sometimes we need to be reined in a little. When it's live, all cards on the table, you know?
That's the issue, is it is all cards on the table when it's live. Yes. And I 100%, before we started the show, thought we were getting fired after. I was like, this is going to be our last show. We're done after this.
Yes. We don't get fined for dunking here. You know, if you notice that, we do not.
No, we're encouraged. We're encouraged to dunk.
Attack the rim.
Yeah.
Attack the rim at all costs.
We don't get yelled at like my player in 2K. I don't know if you played the my player in 2K. There is a scene where like you do a breakaway dunk and the coach is like, don't do that. Like, what do you want me to do? Just like finger roll? I mean, I guess finger roll yields the same result, but it's like, I'm a white point guard. Let me have this dunk, all right, coach? Come on.
Like, do you remember when, like, 4 minutes ago I said, look, man, no silliness this way. I wonder if anyone in our audience believed that and was like, yeah, there are lots of topics. I'm pumped for these guys to get into them. But there are none. So here we go. Jeremy, what is the first topic this week? I don't want to make people wait anymore. I know it's a lot going on.
Let's get into it. It's Thursday. We talk about wrestling on Thursday. I can't even say that with a straight face with the show we have today. 5 minutes on the clock. Let's get into it. Let's go all the way back to Friday, Joe. We're a week behind on things. Nikola Cross, one of your favorites. Yes. She's the number one contender for the SmackDown Women's Championship. She will be facing Bayley at Clash of Champions. It's Bayley's first challenger since ridding the universe of Sasha Banks, sending her off to Tatooine or wherever. I don't know. That was
strong. Good effort, man. I appreciate that.
That's a planet in the film, right? Tatooine. Yeah. Yes. All right. So sent her off there. She'll be back on Friday. But Nikki Cross and Bayley is the first big program coming out. Joe, are you excited for this extremely fresh matchup?
Well, that's it. I mean, it's so new, it's so fresh, it's cutting edge. You know, it reminds me of ECW in 1995. No, but in all seriousness, this is certainly a bold play. And there's a couple ways to look at this. So, do we agree that Bayley is keeping her title? Just a surface level. Yeah. I know there's another route which we'll tackle in a second, but... Okay, so considering we both think Bayley is keeping this belt and then probably going to face the legit boss at the Hell in a Cell, why does poor Nikki have to be in this spot? That's the only thing I can... So then you have to say, okay, there's got to be a reason she's in this spot, right? They're not trying to murder the Nikki Cross. They like the Nikki Cross. They want her on the television show, I would assume, I would guess. So then it's like, okay, they want to develop and further the Alexa angle. Okay... So then, does that mean... Here's the scenarios I'm laying on the table for you. Bayley wins, Alexa has no involvement, even though she sometimes has the pencil on these things. That's A. B, Bayley wins because Alexa costs Nikki the match. C, the dark horse here, that the legit boss returns, costing Bayley her title, and allowing them to do their favourite play of... This feud doesn't need a title, so let's give the title to a feud that is not nearly as important. Your take.
I assume that Bayley is just going to win, beat her outright, clean. I knew where you're going with, Sasha Banks cost Bayley the championship because it doesn't need the belt or anything. To me, like, the feud is about the belt, right? The Bayley and Sasha Banks feud. Bayley's promo, which I thought was excellent, by the way. Bayley's promo was just essentially saying, like, yeah, we lost our titles. I didn't need you anymore. I knew you were going to do that to me, so I did it to you first. Like, it's about the belts. All the looks to the belts, Sasha holding up all the belts when, you know, she didn't have any, and Bayley was just, like... It's about that SmackDown Women's title. If you take the title off of Bayley because you think, oh, this feud's big enough, it doesn't need the belt, that's just dumb. That is just, that's overthinking this entire thing and shooting yourself in the foot.
Well, with that in mind, Jeremy, what did the Bayley promo, there's a famous angle that received the same follow-up that Bayley did this last week. Do you remember what it was, Jeremy?
Owens and Jericho?
Yes.
Yeah.
What did Owens do after that promo? Do you remember?
He lost to Goldberg. And
Yes, he did, yes.
And then...
Because remember, as we all know, Goldberg and Brock Lesnar certainly needed the title in Rome, didn't they? Look, I'm 100% with you. To me, it seems most likely Bayley's winning here, and they're going to just continue the Nikki down spiral deal, and probably Alexa's going to kill Nikki next month. Whenever that, you know, and then they'll do whatever they do. However, when you say the phrase of they don't need to overcomplicate this, alarm bells, because if they have a chance to overcomplicate, they will. Because, and in fairness to them, and I don't mean to sort of credit it, but there is something to be said, they do enjoy the whole subverting expectations deal, right? They enjoy that kind of just when you thought we were going to give you what we wanted, we pull it back. I wouldn't be surprised, that's all I'm saying. Going with Nikki again when you've already done the whole last match, last shot thing, it's just there's something interesting there that people are going to avoid, and then if it happens, it will be an extraordinary event to follow on social media. I'm not saying it should, I'm just saying the Nikki Cross choice makes me think there could be that fault running around. That's all.
This Nikki Cross program goes to show, one, how little they have the depth with the roster, but how little they've actually put into it outside of Bayley killing all these girls over the past year. Because the people in this match were Alexa, who Bayley has beaten and who probably wasn't going to win because of this gimmick change she's undergoing, Nikki, who Bayley's beaten plenty of times, Tamina, who Bayley has actually beaten on pay-per-view, and like, why would you even want to do that match, and Lacey, who Bayley has beaten plenty of times. And even if you put Naomi in, and by the way, Naomi had the best claim, she beat Bayley in a singles match before SummerSlam. There's history with Sasha. That was such an easy feud to book, I feel like, coming out of this Sasha Banks stuff, but whatever. Even Naomi, Bayley's beaten her multiple times over the past year.
Yeah.
Like, she's beaten all of the only person who was, like, featured on SmackDown who she hasn't really beaten a bunch is Mandy Rose, and then she just got traded to Raw. So, like, they've done nothing to heat these women up after Bayley just destroys them.
I mean, the thing that's interesting is when I saw that Naomi wasn't in the match, I assumed they were going to, like, save that, because there is a reason she beat Bayley, right? Like, they obviously intended it at some point. They obviously intended at some point for Bayley and Naomi to do it. I don't know. I'm assuming, okay? But I just guessed, okay, they're going to save that. But then, now I'm looking at the landscape, and it's like, they're already doing the Banks satellite interview deal. Like,
we think it's satellite. I hope it's satellite.
It has to be. I mean, it's going to be... I would assume it's Hell in a Cell they're doing this match. Wouldn't you at this point?
I hope not. That's what it seems like. I don't know.
Unless they did a draft. You mentioned...
Yeah.
I remember last week you saying like they could split them via draft and then Survivor Series they don't touch again. Like, you tease it and you could do that. But if not, it looks awful. It looks like they're going to do the match at Hell in a Cell. So,
I don't know why you needed to do this satellite interview, unless you're just shoehorning it in there because Sasha got the Mandalorian thing and that trailer just came out this week and you want Michael Cole to be like star of the Mandalorian and stuff. Like, that's the only reason you're bringing Sasha Banks back to television this quickly. And yes, it's gotta be a satellite interview. If you have her walk out on the stage and she does her little pose and she's, you know, just Sasha Banks, complete misfire.
So you want one of those satellite interviews where Cole is doing like his very nervous voice and he's like, I know it was a very traumatic experience for you, legit boss, Sasha Banks, but can you tell us how you feel about the role model's betrayal of you last week in front of the WWE Universe here in the Thunderdome for SmackDown on Fox Live? That's what you want, right?
That was really good. You got every single buzzword and catchphrase in there.
It's amazing. When you sit, like, I understand Cole isn't for everyone. I don't think people fathom how good he is at his shots. Yeah. Like, it's insane. The fact that he sometimes still sounds like a human is an amazing feat. But anyway, yeah, Nikki Cross. Okay, here's an interesting pivot here because we have so many topics. I'm going to overrun on this one of all topics. So here we are. Here's an interesting point. Let's imagine Alexa is going to become female themed. Okay? Do you think that's a correct... That could actually happen, right?
That's what we're hoping for, right? We want Sparkle Bliss in the Funhouse and then Clown Bliss wrestling.
So that would obviously be very, very hard to book. I mean, putting together a thing where you have a 5-foot woman and she's booked like the Fiend, going to be an out in, okay? Is the way to have Alexa turn Nikki back into, you know, crazed Nikki, and then they can just be a tag team as heels with Bray? Because otherwise... Like, if the deal here is just she's, like, Alexa's first victim, I have no clue what you do with Nikki at that point. Because she had then lost to Bayley 19 times and also got beat up by her best friend. That's tough.
That's just when you send her to Raw and give her a fresh coat of paint. What is your suggestion of she turns into crazy Nikki in their tag team? What? What is a tag team in the women's division, Joe?
I know that here's the problem with this stuff, is people get the ideas they don't think about, and I'm talking about everyone here, not just me, not just you, I'm talking about the people that run the show, I'm also considering. He's like, it's a cool idea, right? Oh, Alexa can be a killer clown too, let's do that. He's like, you have to make space for that character. She can't just be a part of the division doing Fatal 4-Ways with Tamina. Like, you can't do that. Look at how they do Bray, right? So, my idea is just that if they're in the tag division, at least they're kind of isolated and you don't have to do Banks Bliss matches where Alexa doesn't sell and stuff. Like, it's, I don't know, that Fiend thing is, it's a lot harder to pull off. I mean, ask Seth Rollins. That poor guy got booed while he's finished 20 times in the cell. It's just difficult. So that was all. But you're right. Nikki will just move brands and they'll be like, here she is, the feisty Nikki Cross in front of the WWE Universe in the WWE Thunderdome. In your face. I don't know. So what I'm saying is, my final take is Nikki's going to win the title in 3 minutes with her finish that I don't remember the name of. That's what I said, I think. Yeah.
Speaking of Raw in your face, that was the tagline for the show on Monday. They stacked this show because it was up against Monday Night Football. It had Keith Lee against Drew McIntyre, champion versus champion tag team match. No titles on the line, just champion versus champion. Dominic in a cage against Seth Rollins, and the women's title match. Asuka and Mickey James were the big matches. Joe, we don't have a singular thought on Raw. There's nothing really, like, let's spend 5 minutes on this topic. Raw is the same show every single week. It's predictable. It's lazy. It's boring.
It's very interesting. I mean, I do agree.
No, that's not the word for it. It's not interesting at all.
Here's why I find it interesting, Jeremy, because when I watch it, if you like isolate each thing, I don't think it's bad. Like, I think Dominic and Seth has been good.
Sure.
I'm happy Mickey James is doing something, even if, like, mostly it sucks, and that match was weird, which we'll get into. The Hurt Business are awesome.
Yes.
Maybe the best thing in the whole promotion right now.
Yes.
Perhaps the industry. I'm going to go up for that. Faction's so cool. So you have that. You have those three things. Like, should this show suck? No. Keith Lee is there. He's doing stuff with Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre. Like, on paper, you look at it and you're like, okay, this all seems relatively interesting. But as one flowing show, week to week, it couldn't feel less must-see, right? Even when it's in my face, I feel like I can miss it. I mean, here's pulling back the curtain for you. I watch this show on, like, literally the day we're recording the section. I'm like, okay, now I have to watch Raw. Like, I have no fear of missing things. The other shows I watch without spoilers. Raw, what are they going to spoil, you know? That Buddy Murphy did another 20-minute match and lost? I don't care. So anyway, the point of this was, all I could think as I watched Raw was, I wonder if there's a young man out there, man or, I don't know, boy or girl, I'm like, but is there a young fan out there that's like, finally I get it, Street Profits versus Shinsuke and Cesaro, let's find out who the real tag champs are. And my take is, I don't know, but I seriously hope so, because what a bizarre... it was a cool match, but, like, why? What was the point? It's just strange.
Maybe if you're tuning in for the first time, which I don't think anybody is, maybe you're like, oh, champion versus champion. This seems like a big deal. This is cool. But, like, yeah. If you watch SmackDown, Lucha House Party just beat Cesaro and Shinsuke off of a distraction. It's like, okay, why do I care about them facing the Raw champions now? These losers just got distracted and lost. Like, it's a bad weekly episodic television show. As a standalone show, it's okay, but when you watch the same show the week before and the week before and the week before, it's all the same. It's all I swear they've been doing this Andrade and Angel Garza tease breakup for 5 months now.
Yeah, that is ridiculous. I mean, Andrade in general appears to have had the same month like 30 times since he called up. Like, he's in the exact same spot. Nothing has changed. That's with quickly, I know we're on Raw and I will get back to it, but it's so indicative to me, and it was an encapsulation of so many things. So there is Shinsuke and Cesaro, and Dolph was like, my God, was he trying. He said if he started a promotion, there'd be one and two guys. He was like the ultimate professionals. And I'm just watching this match like, they lost to Lucha House, but they're going to lose here. Like, there's only so much. In theory, it should be such an awesome tag team. But, like, I don't care about the Cesaro-Shinsuke thing, and that feels like a bummer. So just that quick, you know, sidetrack. But Raw, what do you think about this weird women's division where it is like Asuka and then 10 women just sort of like all next to each other. Because I guess you have the Shane and Nia deal, but now that they're champs, they feel separate. Like, the way that it's all mixed with Natty and Lana and all that good stuff being a strong choice of phrase. Like, do you think this is insane, right? That Asuka has gone straight back to being this kind of champ? Like, what are we doing here, Jeremy? Help.
Remember when Bayley murdered Kairi and Asuka was going to turn into this, like, big-time killer and just murder people herself? Kana was going to come back? People were convinced of this, Joe. I'm sure there were some fake scoops out there that, get ready, going to see a new side of Asuka, and she's just... Asuka just the same person as she was before, and yet she has nobody on this show. Mickey James, bless her, she came back, she got counted out against Natalya, and then she beat Lana. Like, alright, she's a legend. They don't present her like that at all. Like, she's just another person. And that finish, I guess the ref screwed up, something happened there, whatever happened, it did not look good. The Shayna Naya stuff, I like Shayna. The Naya team drags her down to me. This is not the Shayna Baszler that was just whooping everybody's ass in NXT. She's just kind of another person. Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan. It's fine. Mandy Rose just got traded to Raw. I have no idea why. No idea what their actual plans are for her. I'm not even sure they know what their actual plans are for her. I don't know, Joe. I'm so checked out on Raw every single week. Just, it's 3 hours. Like, the Keith Lee stuff, it's cool that he's up there. He's just doing the same match every single week. All right, face Drew, ends in a no contest. Face Randy, ends in a no contest. Like, he's the third wheel in that feud, and he has a win over Randy. So theoretically, like, he should be a bigger part of it, but it's just the same match. And then you got Retribution. I'm like, all right, what are we doing here? Just, it's a draining, exhausting show.
Yeah, I can't really disagree with any of that. I mean, it's the truth, right? A lot of it. I don't know what we love a rebuild, Jeremy, right? What's the route here to getting the Monday Night Raw back on track? Like, what do we do? How do we get this back in people's faces? Do we?
You just say it's in your face, and then that fixes everything.
So you have. I understand they're probably going to do a shake-up, but let's just look at the pieces they have to deal with. Is a Randy title win the way? Because if not, like, what do you even do with Drew at this point? Drew's... I don't want to say he's kind of... It feels like it's met its, like, conclusion, but to me, it does feel like it's reached its natural conclusion. Like, I have nothing left to see Drew do with that belt on this occasion. Like, once he can get it back, that's fine. But then I look at it and I'm like, okay, so then Randy wins and faces Keith Lee, like... Sure, like, okay. I feel like I've explored that one too.
Yeah, see, that, like, that's the issue of doing this match 100 times. If you did Randy and Keith Lee at Payback and Keith Lee wins, and then you just don't touch that match until it's time again, like, you do Randy and Drew, Randy wins, and then you go back to Keith Lee and Randy and it feels fresh. Instead, I've seen Keith Lee and Randy Orton wrestle 4 times in 3 weeks. Why am I going to care about this match a month from now, when I'm sure they'll wrestle at least another couple of times between then? Like, none of this stuff feels fresh at all. None of it.
Yeah, it's just odd to me because, I agree with your take earlier. In a vacuum, these shows are not, like, bad shows. Like, they're not the kind of shows where in an hour in, you're like, I need to stop watching. There'll be good wrestling on every Raw. Like, Cedric and Ricochet this week just had just a terrific, like, short TV match where they were really physical, they were tight, they worked to their angle, you know, and it was personal. And it was great. And it's like, by the time the show ends, you've forgotten it existed. Like, it doesn't... There's just a disconnect. I can't recall the last time. I think early this year, actually, there were some moments. But for the most part, Raw fails to have that element of, like, I want to tune in to see this tonight. It's more them trying to patch their way through 3 hours in the best way they can. Sometimes the results are good, like, for example, the Hurt Business doing their deal with Retribution. It's like, that's a cool moment. But it isn't something that you tuned in saying, I want to see what happens with that. Like, we've done that before, right? So, I don't know. It just feels like, this is such a lame critique, but it's my honest one. It just feels like such a long show. Like, it really does. I mean, I try to watch the shows in as much like full as I can. But man, Raw is like, you're glancing at the clock, it's this tough. So the one thing that I'm intrigued on is like what they do with Dominic. Like, how do you now
face Buddy Murphy another 100 times?
It seems like Buddy's turning babyface though, right? Is that a guess?
Sure. I truly don't know. Like, Seth Rollins went from having like 5 people in his group and now is just like, he's a cult leader without any followers. Like, all right. Like, he's a preacher with nobody listening, which I don't know.
Seth, like, you know, it's interesting though. Seth is like, where do you put Seth? Because we agree. So Drew's already done the Seth feud, right? And like maybe Randy was like, oh, Seth's a heel. You can't turn Seth babyface anytime, so he's full heel. But then on SmackDown, Roman's not losing that belt for a long time. Like, I'm genuinely, this is such like inside baseball, but I'm genuinely just intrigued as to where they place these guys. Because Seth has been feuding with Ray for, by my count, 15 years. So it'll be interesting where they go. Like, how do you fit Dominic into the regular rotation of baby faces that lose to the Hurt Business? Like, I don't know. All of this stuff is just weird to me. I'm just interested where it falls, I guess.
You strap Dominic. I've been saying it. Just put the title on the kid. Who cares?
I've already noticed. I remember like 2 weeks ago, I said that like, it's going to backfire. People are just going to be like, oh, what about Apollo Crews or someone? Like, it's just inevitable. And I saw it on social media. People have already done
that. They're wrong.
Where were his PWG matches and all that thing? You know, it's hard. I think he's done great. By the way, I know that we are very mean about the Seth Rollins at times. He has been extraordinary with Dominic. I have nothing but praise for the stuff he's done. I'm just speaking. I guess Keith Lee and Seth could be fun, right? You could do something like that. Because I believe, based on what I've read, Keith Lee eliminated Seth at the Survivor Series, whenever that was, and that like turned Seth into the, I guess that turned into the side. I don't know, who cares? But that's something you could do. It certainly feels like, after having this conversation where I intended to rebuild Raw, they need a shake-up as soon as possible, right? And not one of those shake-ups where they move 8 guys from both, so you end up with the same rosters, just on different shows, which is one of their best plays. Like a smart shake-up where you say, okay, fresh opponents all around. That's what they really need.
They'll just move Sheamus and Corbin. I get that Rude is coming over. There's Raw Underground. That show, that thing is just gone to nothing. Just, I'd build the entire show around the Hurt Business, honestly. And like, they're kind of doing that. I would do that even more. Like, I would do your play, Joe. Strap up Big Bob, give him the belt, let him run with it, and just build the entire thing around the Hurt Business. I'd kill Retribution right off the bat. I don't care about those guys. They're jokes.
So they are, I mean, this is not a scoop, to be clear. This is just watching their promo. So that is shameful. Dio Madden, right?
Yeah, Dio Madden.
Mia Yim,
yep.
Dijakovic, and then I guess Vanessa Bohm, from what I could gauge.
No, it's Mercedes Martinez.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the problem with that gimmick is like, if it's an NXT call-up they're really excited about, they wouldn't put them in this gimmick. Like, I know that sounds really negative and unfair, but that's what my instincts tell me. Like, if they're super excited about a guy and they want to call him up, it's like, they'll call him up as is, like Keith Lee. As is, that's fun. But, you know, Keith Lee, I know they've changed his, but he's still Keith Lee, right? He still does his cool moves stuff. Dwayne Jacobic is like a leader of a faction. I don't know. It's just, it's a gimmick that, I guess it's logical, but is it something we really care about? Guys that were
Because they buried it like, immediately with the way they portrayed it. And then it's like, oh, we cause chaos, but only on Monday nights. Like, it's been very bad. The only way, and look, nobody's buying, if Dijakovic is the leader, no one's taking this guy seriously. No offense to him. Like, he's got a good look. He's a fine talker. He's good in the ring and all this stuff. But, like, we saw him in NXT. He was just, his claim to fame in NXT was having good matches with Keith Lee and losing more often than not. Like, that's who the guy was in NXT. And that's the case with a lot of these call-ups here. It's like, okay, Mercedes Martinez, she lost a bunch. Mia Yim lost a bunch. Shane Thorne was barely on TV. Dio Madden, the last we saw him, he was getting F5'd by Brock Lesnar through the table.
Yeah.
Like, no one cares about these. You've got to have that. Like, maybe Randy Orton is the leader of Retribution. And then at least
something like that.
Yeah, like then at least you get some type of edge and make them feel like Edge can be the leader of Retribution. But then it makes them feel like they're a big deal and not just, okay, here's a bunch of NXT dudes who didn't really have much success. Now they're here to cause chaos by throwing bricks through the same window.
Yeah, it definitely needs to be like a, I mean, I shouldn't use this phrase because of how it went last time, but you know, the higher power deal where they're just acting on someone else's behalf? Like, it has to be that, right? Like, it can't just be disgruntled PC guys act like being silly. I don't know. It's not really my thing anyway. It's always felt to me like emergency button TNA stuff. You know, like back in the day where it was like, we're on a new network, let's do a heel faction. The classic TNA play for any kind of leverage. And that's what it's felt like to me. So it seems like their interest is dwindles in it every week anyway. So hopefully Raw gets better because I have to watch it regardless. And I try to watch it in full, so I would like for it to be good. Just in any way compelling would be a step up, to be honest.
Wednesday night, we had AEW Dynamite. Great show from start to finish. I thought a lot of good wrestling on the show. Peaked with the main event, parking lot brawl with the Best Friends against Santana and Ortiz. These four men beat the hell out of each other. Throwing each other through cars, jumping on the cars, jumping on, they had doors, they had lumber, they had all kind of nonsense in this. Best Friends end up winning, and then Sue was there to flip off Santana and Ortiz. This feud was like fine, I thought, for the most part. I mean, it was a feud based around the Trent's mom's car getting destroyed. Like, it's great pro wrestling right there. They took it up to, like, they made it worth it with this parking lot brawl. Like, it made me feel like, all right, this whole feud was great, this whole feud was worth it, and there was a real, like, Trent and Chucky T were extremely pissed off that the van got vandalized.
Okay, so I need to hijack this briefly, because I want to talk about the match, but I'm left interested by my own split on this deal, because, like, I just said Raw had good matches, but I don't think it's a good show. What would you say, in your view, this is not like an objective thing, this is for your enjoyment. What makes Dynamite being mostly just good matches? I'm excluding the main event, because the main event's special, right? But, like, you know, the FTR match, the
they're
Hangman
new
match.
Like, that's honestly what it comes
that's
down
it,
to.
Right?
Yeah, okay, is, that, like, they're fresh. And these teams... Look, Cesaro and Nakamura, Street Profits, like, all right, I just saw Cesaro and Nakamura lose to Lucha House Party. Good match, why do I care about them? Like, AEW just doesn't beat all their guys like a drum every single week.
Yeah. No, I agree. I know that someone out there thought that, and I was genuinely pondering it myself. Like, why do I... Because I'm not sure I buy the wins and losses matter thing, but it certainly has an impact when you haven't seen guys lose often. Right, like, and yeah. The Hangman deal is fresh, just seeing him wrestle singles, really, like a competitive match. So I agree. Now, on to the main event. This felt like one of those moments that will be, like, marked. You know, like, this was a special Dynamite main event. Now, they have had many good main events, but because of the stylistic choice with this, this genuinely was, like, one of those ones where I think we'll talk about it years down the line. That could prove to be a complete fallacy. That may not happen. But... I'm with you. Like, this feud is just, it's not really my thing, and it felt very much linked to the Jericho Orange Cassidy deal. That's like, it's all fine. It's just, it's a little goofy for me. So I thought this would be Stadium Stampede, but with less guys, is what I expected it to be. And I like Stadium Stampede. It's fun. This was nothing like that, right? This was violent. This was tough to watch at times. It was brutal. So I just. I come across like a hypocrite here, right? Because like a week ago I said, stop doing stunts and all that business. Here's what I'll say. Four wrestlers here who are putting the main event on TNT. If you're ever going to do some dumb stuff like this and really damage yourself on cars, and I say that lovingly to all four guys, this is the place to do it, right? My issue, you know, a week ago with Matt Hardy or whenever that was with the transition, that's a whole other thing. And I still wish guys would just be a little nicer to themselves. You know, this is tough. However, boy, did they maximise their moment here, right? Like, they had this feud that was kind of trotting along. People wanted it on the pay-per-view, but not really. It wasn't, like, a big topic. So they get given this TV main event and a stipulation, and they said, we are going to get every ounce out of this. And they did. So while we've both had gripes on the Proud and the Powerful men, and their handling here in AEW, it was still cool as a fan of theirs to see them get a chance to create something like that. Because I do believe it is something that will live for some time. I think it was really very special.
This is typically not my cup of tea, like this kind of hardcore brawl around. Like people are like, oh, this is just GCW with a national TV deal. And I'm like, it's sort of, yeah, like this is the kind of stuff that happens in GCW. I'm not a big fan of like the GCW style. Some of their stuff is great, but like the deathmatch kind of stuff, yeah, not for me. This was not a full-on deathmatch. I was more uncomfortable watching Omega and Moxley, because like the barbed wire stuff, the mousetrap stuff, like that's the kind of stuff that I'm just like, that's really not my style. This just felt like a fight in a parking lot. Obviously it's a wrestling match, but and they're using doors and stuff, but it really just felt like that kind of fight, as opposed to let's do a bunch of stunts that don't actually make sense. And maybe that's my other issue with a lot of death matches, is they're just out there of, all right, how can we prove how tough we are in this death match? There's no real story behind it. It's just like, hey, two great death match wrestlers who prove how tough they are. There was a story behind it. You can say what you want about the story and how they set it up and stuff. At least I knew why they didn't like each other and why they wanted to beat the hell out of each other and why it came to this.
They did a remarkable job of like walking the line between innovation and being creative, but also keeping an authenticity that made it feel believable. It's such a silly word, talking about wrestling, but that is what I'm going to go with, right? There was a feeling of, as you said, like actual animosity. There was a grit to it, an edge to it that was extended beyond just the idea of like, let's do this because it'd be cool. They really. I think the best friends are great, but Santana and Ortiz are they're so good at acting in a fashion that allows you to fully believe what they're doing. They have been since they showed up in their first TV appearance in Impact. They always have been this way, but this was a feat, because this was not like a straight lace program here, right? Like, no matter how tough they act in their promos, there's only so far you can push that, because it's about what they did to poor Sue's van, and that will always be funny in some way. So the ability to do that, and then the best friends to up it and match them with an intensity level that left us like, man, this match about Sue's van is pretty brutal. And when I say pretty brutal, I mean it was almost, wow, I can't believe this is a TV main event. It really did feel like, as soon as it ended, my take was, that's something people are going to mark on the Dynamite history. So just bravo to those guys. They made the absolute most of that spot, must say.
I was real worried when they were like, this is the main event. I didn't know what you would main event outside of that, because there wasn't a big match on this show, right? Like, if that's not the main event, what would they have gone with?
Yeah. No, I agree. Paige
and Kazarian. But yeah, when I saw that was the main event, I was just like, ooh, I don't know about that. But they delivered in spades.
My honest take, when I looked at the lineup, I saw people saying, you know, Dynamite could announce, like, us two having a fight, and people would be like, stack cards, stack, could do a million. Like, it happens every week. But I looked at it and was like, I don't know how much there is here for me. But one thing that was really smart was the matches, especially the Hangman match and the FTR match, were, like, very professional television matches. And they were exciting, but they weren't, like, oh my God, when's this going to end? You know, when guys overindulge on the spots and stuff? They were very professional and compact, and that allowed the violence to really, like, shine through the screen at the end of the show.
Yeah.
By the way, I know that the FTR thing is, like, they're going to polarize everyone now forever because they do podcasts or whatever, but that match they did with the Jungle Boy and the Luchasaurus, what's their team name? Help me.
Jurassic Express.
Jurassic Express. Thank you. So that deal, I almost called them the Lucha House Party. I'm like, was dead set on
a Luchasaurus House Party.
Yes. So that match was like a perfect example of what I think they're so great for in AEW. Is like, they took those guys and what they're good at and was like, okay, we're going to maximize this within a format here, right? The amount of like false finishes they did that wasn't excessive, where I actually bit on a roll up from Jungle Boy like 8 times. It was such a smart match, and it was a perfect example of where for all the critics, and I understand they're not for everyone, but to me at least, there's a lot to be learned from what they can achieve in a 10-15 minute TV match without going crazy and leaving you not wanting any more. Like, that match ended, I was like, I'll happily watch those 10 wrestle again. It was really a great kind of way of giving me enough that I enjoyed it and loved every minute, but without going, here's everything we could possibly do. Same thing goes for Frankie Kazarian, who is just an extra, like, he's such a good pro. Such a good pro, and they never really use it, but his ability to give them good TV matches is very useful on a time like this where you just want to do some story stuff with Hangman. So credit to those guys, because they really kind of set, laid the foundations for what the insanity of the street fight was. So, yeah.
Did Tony Khan make an appearance, dressing just shorts and a shirt? I don't want to hear anything else about our wardrobe if Tony Khan is just going to show up like that. All right?
I love you said that like there's a lot of comments about it.
There is. We were told that collars are now mandatory on this show. I've got Sean burying my appearance to Starks every single week. So there's plenty of commentary on our wardrobe. But now I can point to Tony Khan and be like, look, this man runs the wrestling company. He just shows up like he just rolled out of bed on a Saturday. So don't knock our wardrobe anymore.
Do you enjoy this, like, the Bucks being edgy deal? I'm not sure if I do. I think Omega's doing great character work, which is a stunning thing I never expected to say. But the Bucks are like, I don't know, it's a little try-hard for me. You're like the tough guy, we super kick anyone deal. I'm not sure it suits them, I guess, is my point. I'm not sure.
I think that's almost the point, is... I mean, it gives them an edge. I don't mind it. I think it's kind of fun of... Like, they've made a bunch of money, so they're just going to go around super kicking people. Like, who cares? And it's not like who have they super kicked? The announcer, referee. It's not like they're going around, like, super kicking a bunch of tough dudes or anything. So I think that's, like, the point of, like, hey, we're edgy, we're tough, but we're also picking on, like, even Marco Stunt, when Kenny is, like, bullying Marco Stunt and stuff. It's like, look who you guys are, like, actually picking on here. But that's what the bully does, is you pick on someone... smaller who you don't think's actually gonna mess with you. So I don't mind it.
And also, in fairness, FTR kind of sold it that way, right? You know, when they saw, like, when they was walking past, they like just completely clowned them. They had no respect for the tough guy Young Bucks. So that makes
FTR
sense.
FTR is gonna shoot on them once they're in the ring together.
Of course. This is serious business, brother. Okay, we're talking about stylistic differences in the world of tag team wrestling. You do not just scoff at that kind of thing. But so do you think Full Gear will be Omega and Hangman, and if so, what does Moxley do? Is my final question on the AEW universe.
I have no idea what Moxley does, because he's doing Archer now, because Full Gear's at the end of November.
Okay.
I think you do Moxley and Darby in some type of just nonsensical train wreck match.
This is going to sound biased, so I will say it. Ricky Starks. Just saying. Ricky Starks has got serious, like, internal momentum just from being good on the show, which is a feat, because in wrestling now, everything is clipped and gift, so none of it seems to matter. How every week you see more love for Ricky Starks, right? Like, I think there's something there. I don't know. Maybe it'd be too similar to the MJF deal in presentation, but I'm not sure.
See, I think Starks would be great. I think Eddie Kingston would be great, because he keeps mentioning that Battle Royal. And
Jane Schultz.
I think Moxley wants to do that kind of crazy match again. And like, Darby was the first choice because there's a story there. They clearly have some plans for Darby. Kingston is there as well. I mean, if you're gonna headline with... You're probably headlining with that tag team match, honestly. So you can do kind of a lesser world title match. Like, they still have Cody coming back. MJF has got to fit in there somewhere. Jericho's got to fit in there somewhere. So they've got plenty. They've got plenty of options on what they can do. But considering it's still 2 months away, like two whole months.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I must say, but I know that it's just like, oh, Joe Fort and Eddie Kingston segment was good. Wow. But that segment was really cool. When I mean, they overdo the beating up people in the crowd thing, but that as an isolated segment, I have to, the delivery of, you need to sort out your, like, your own, what was his phrase there, Jeremy, when he spoke to the Blade?
You need to sort out your house, right?
Yes, and the Blade was like, yes, I do, Eddie. Thanks for saying that on TNT Live. he didn't even have an issue. Like, he mentioned it last week, just mentioned it again this week.
This is what was so, is people were like, oh, what is he talking about? It's like, do you not get it? Like, the bunny, Allie? No. My favorite bit is, like, this guy just sees his wife dating another person and stuff, and he's just cool with it until Eddie Kingston is like, sort that shit out, dude. And he's like, oh, exactly. Yeah, maybe I should pay attention to that a little bit more.
I do love the way that Eddie's like, Eddie refuses the idea of their affection, and I think that's the best. I don't know if it's even a character touch or he just doesn't want it to be that way, but it works so great as a character touch. Like, his actual response was, grow up. He was like, why, what are you talking about affection? I'm not naming us. We're not Groot, we're just friends, that's all. I help these guys out.
I mean, that's, he's, like, that's almost the running bit in AEW now. Like, MJF said, exactly, it, like, a lot of factions around here. Yeah, Starks likes to say, you know, we're not faction, we're like an MMA team and things like that. So a lot of different takes on how they're grouping people together.
What is your genuine reaction when Jake Roberts walks out of a mic at this point?
Like, oh my god, I'm afraid. I'm deathly afraid when he comes out with a mic.
I love his transition from, like, when he's just talking to when he's saying something he's clearly prepared beforehand. It's glorious how, like, shift is. It's literally just like, Moxley, Archer, everyone dies. And then he'll go into, like, some poetry. And it's like, whoa. You cool, Jake? Like, and his hair is good. I need, when it's time for this hair to go, I don't know when that will be, I'm just going to walk in and be like, Jake Roberts, 2020, bring it to me now. And I'm going to wear jean shorts. It's going to be full AEW over here.
Will Hobbs got signed. Good on him. He's in a big six-man tag next week. Yes. They have so many good, like, prospects that they're already doing something with. Like, their talent roster is pretty amazing.
So here's a fun question that we're never going to find out the answer to, and we never should, but I'm just going to ask it. Could AEW now do a brand split?
They could, right? Oh, 100%. Yeah, 100% they could do a brand split.
That is wild, man, because I remember when the idea came around, I was like, I don't know how many...
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Out there. Like, WWE signing everyone. I was so wrong. Like, you just said it, their young group is, it's very exciting. They have a lot of options. I mean, these pay-per-view cards are going to get harder and harder to put together. I just hope, you know, what I said a few weeks ago, of like, don't then make that, okay, we need to do 10-man matches, battle royals. Look, if you're going to be a major league promotion, sorry, Colt, a major league wrestling federation, you're going to just have to leave people off pay-per-view sometimes. That's just the way it is. And they're going to need to accept that, because that roster is very, like, strong, deep.
Retro review. I like how we had three topics. We're supposed to put 5 minutes, and we've gone 45 minutes now. So
that's tough. Yes. Okay. Set this one up for, and then I'm off the rails on this one. Go ahead.
Yeah, you said this. You're gonna run long on this. So God help us. I picked this match: Sting against Vampiro, Human Torch match, Great American Bash 2000. Vampiro's in the news. His new documentary is out. Check that out. I've heard very good things about it. Sting should always be in the news. Sting rules. I don't know what I'm supposed to set up here. It was, the point of this match was you set your opponent on fire, and that's how you win. And that's what happened in this match. Somebody got set on fire.
This is, and I think I've said this before, but if you wanted to watch one, like, 20-minute clip of a wrestling show purely for comedic value, only as far as the commentary, this is a all-time goldmine. This is the co-main of Great American Bash, right? And you can tell that a lot's already happened. Because Schiavone...
This followed Ric Flair against David Flair.
Yes. And Schiavone is... Like, he's perplexed because he says there is a major announcement coming tonight and it is still yet to happen. He can't fathom that they're going to save that. I don't even know what it was. I think it may be Goldberg turning heel, but it may just not be a thing. So this video package, Jeremy, your thoughts on Vampiro doing like his deal and then just Sting's so, like solo line in the whole promo being, "You're psycho." That's the only thing. I'm pretty sure it's the only thing they give Sting. And I thought, this is going to be as good as I remember it being. So yes, the video package firstly. Did you watch it? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I watched the video package. I thought it was weak. I was actually expecting like more. You know what? It wasn't... It was weak from like a storytelling standpoint. I was like, what's the issue with these two? But as far as like production, the shots they would do, the cutaways, the effects they added to it and stuff, all of that was tremendous.
Yes. So I need to set this up as far as the announcer. So we have Scott Hudson, who puts in an all-time performance here. Mark Madden, who predicts Sting is going to die in before the match and then gets very scared when Sting almost dies. And Tony Schiavone, who appears to be at the end. This is...
checked out. He's a year past checked out.
He's plotting like his next career move. He has no clue why he's still here. So, as you said, the match is about setting the other man on fire. And Sting, instead, is at the top of the stage. And he, like, calls the torch to his hand. And it, like, floats around his arm for, like, an hour.
He has the pulley thing. And he pulls it up. And I think, like, he thought it was just going to, like, come directly to him. But it's on, like, it's like a fishing line. And so it's, like, dangling around. So he's got to, like, maneuver and swing it into his hand. Hope you're not afraid of heights, Vampiro. And Vampiro's like freaking out. Like, what are you talking about? What are we doing? We gotta go up there now.
So the exact quote, and this may be the greatest piece of trash talk ever. Vampiro, are you afraid of heights? Because I'm not. If you wanna torch me, you gotta get up here. Boy. Drops a boy at the end of it. He dunked on him and like stared him down after and got a tech. Amazing. And of course, as you said, the bit here is Vampiro is actually scared of heights. Mark Madden is like, I knew it all along, and Vampiro's saying, why didn't you tell me, Mark? It's insane. Okay, and this is when Schiavone gives one of the greatest quotes ever in history of wrestling. To think that a man who can go the extremes to burn someone is afraid of heights is mind-boggling. And to that I say, yes, it is, Tony. I would agree, that is mind-boggling. He describes the stipulation as beyond comprehension, also true. And then he says, Sting obviously has found the weakness of Vampiro, that being heights. All true. All of these things undeniable. So he has Vampiro beat, checkmate, come up here, boy, he says. And then he just climbs down and goes and fights Vampiro.
That's what confused me, is why did he go to the ring after that? Like, just make him come to you. Let's go down to the ring, fight, so we can climb up to this thing. It made no sense to me.
So they do like a little bit of a match, and then Vampiro puts like a gasoline on Sting. And
a complete tip that Sting is losing this match.
And I've got to stress this. Like, Schiavone is calling this like it's a normal wrestling match, but the things he's saying are ridiculous. But his tone never changes until the dramatic fall. Right? The rest of the time, for an example, so then they fly up the ramp and they start climbing, and Schiavone says, I'm not so sure anybody wants to see this. True. The fact is, and I love the way that he makes it clear, the fact is Sting has been doused with gasoline, Sting is a spark up there, and Sting's going to ignite. All said, like he's calling like chain wrestling. Sting is a spark up there, and Sting is going to ignite. And then they climb up to the top, the fire is up there, and all of a sudden, like, the Undertaker arrives. The Lightning and Thunder deal. And I know that's Sting's thing. Do you know how I know this, Jeremy? Because Scott Hudson says, and I quote, the Sting lightning effect is on. Sorry? Why? Is it a lightning effect? The production team's doing this? Or is Sting... Like, what's happening?
Sting controls it with his mind. Sting in his mind. Out. Maybe Vampiro's afraid of thunderstorms as well. I don't know. That should have been explained, too. That, like, I know you're afraid of lightning and thunder, boy, so I'm going to have this stuff go off while we're up top on these heights while I'm trying to burn you. Sting is a maniacal genius, all right?
By the way, I missed. When they're climbing, Sting takes, like, a stunt to absolute silence. And it's, like, so sad.
It's not even... It is a stunt bump, but it's literally like 5 feet off the ground. Yeah, like Sting's not taking nothing, but they still call it like, "Oh my god!" Like, no, what happened there? Like, it's this big thing, and yeah, the crowd is just like, "What is happening? Shivani, this is nonsense."
Shivani's like, "That is it. It's over." Yeah. And the crowd reacts so little that Sting has to just stand up and start climbing again. It's tragic.
This is when Vampiro screwed up though, because he gets to the top. He could have just grabbed the torch and then just like dropped it down on Sting. Match over. He was on gas. He was gassed up.
That would have been incredible. Yes, that would have been something. So then they're on top of the stage here, and the lights are flickering, and like they're just doing. I understand they're high, but have you ever seen such lifeless brawling in all your life?
No.
And all in the meantime, Shivani is like, these men are fighting for their life up there, and it's like, I don't know, man. Maybe they are. At this point, you're so deep in, a man has gasoline on in this fire up there, and they're like 30 feet in the air. Maybe they are, Jeremy. Maybe someone's going to die. I don't know. So, yes, they're brawling, and that's, you know, being generous. And then the lights go completely out. They come back on, and Sting, and it definitely is Sting, Jeremy.
100% it's Sting.
Definitely not a stunt man. He's a liar, and he, like, sets himself, looks around the arena, and does, like, a swanton bomb, stunt bomb. Into like a big pad. And I can't do this. I can't replicate it. You just need to go to the network and pull this up, because their call of this bump is all time. Would you agree? The terror in these men's, and this is when it gets really good. But firstly, Jerry, just please help me try to capture the glory of this bump. Like, how great is this?
So the lights go out and they're clearly doing a body switch here with a stunt double first thing. And Vampiro just grabs the torch. It's like, okay. And he does the little spear. They're like jabbing. They're like, get back. And then Sting just walks into it. He's like, I got nowhere to go here. Just kind of walk into it. And yeah. He kind of walks around the staging up there. He goes to the top. He grabs a little cord that's standing over there. And he like looks around and everything. And then he does his swanton bomb off of this. And the crowd's like kind of into it. They're like, oh, okay. Man on fire just dove down. And he's gone out. They're rushing and everything. The announcers sell this as like complete shock, horror, death. My favorite part is after it, when they do the like silent, like bring it down kind of stuff to show like how serious business this is. Like,
this is
fans,
yes.
Fans can't believe what we just witnessed here.
Yes.
Sting was just set on fire. He fell 40 feet from the top of the Nitro Vision, and fans, just stay with us. We'll be back. We'll provide an update. And it's like, cut to the video package for the main event with Kevin Nash, whoever the fuck said it.
So I've got so much greatness from that. That is the best part of the match, to be clear. So Scott Hudson, everyone else, you hear them like throwing their headsets off because they're like disgusted. And Scott Hudson like sticks with it, and he's like, it cuts to Vampiro, and he's like, don't show that maniac here again. And then he goes into Steve Borden has kids. I have to give credit here. So a big influence for my part of this pod, whatever I bring to this insane show, comes from a wrestling podcast called Getting Networked. If you have your pod app right now, look it up. It's a brilliant podcast, and they covered this match. And they really captured and focused in on an element here that could get lost during all the chaos, which is that as the fire extinguishers are being aimed at Sting, like they are assaulting Sting with these fire extinguishers, right? They are just launching. And Tony Schiavone legitimately says, maybe they're doing it to keep him cool, and no one questions. And this isn't my... I would have missed this. There's so much comedy here. I've got to give him credit. The Getting Network guys, tremendous. It's so true that Schiavone actually says they're keeping him cool. They are blasting this man. His feet are going up and down. So, yeah, check that out, because that's brilliant. But here's where I really... To me, this is where it gets extraordinary. So you said it. They cut the camera, the announce desk. They're all perplexed. Schiavone's doing this. Schiavone says, what do you want to say? And Hudson, straight face, says, we just watched Steve Borden kill himself, and it is a nothing line. It goes on, okay? Schiavone now is questioned morally by Mark Madden, and he says, and I quote, when we talked about setting a man on fire, I thought, well, maybe, hopefully the guy's leg will get on fire, the boot will get on fire, or the arm or something, but not the whole body go up in flames. Like, Tony drawing the line there is glorious. And then he questions, Did he jump to save himself? Fair question. Scott Hudson has a simple answer. He can stay up there and burn to death or take his chance and jump, you know, down to the stage. they're doing all this, and it's like, it isn't the main event of the show. As you said, they're talking about the format and, like, send it, what we're doing next, and all this good stuff. And Schiavone apologises as a professional. He says, I'm sorry that we cannot sit here, as we usually do, and try to analyse what we have seen, because we have seen the damnedest thing we have ever seen in sports entertainment, which is one of the greatest quotes. After all he's seen, the best thing you can muster up as a compliment for this is one of the damnedest things we have ever seen in sports entertainment. Sure, Tony, you just told me he's dead. Can we not describe it as one of the damnedest things? So this was special, and I have to say, Jerry, it gets... I'm carrying on this route next week. Do you have options next week? And you know this Monday thing? I give you two options. It went so well with the Firefly Funhouse.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. We can carry on this path and go to September 17th, 2000, as in a scaffold tag match, Shane Douglas and Torrey Wilson take on Billy Kidman.
Oh,
and the
my God. Okay.
Or you can have a good wrestling match from the exact same day, 1995, Ric Flair versus Arn Anderson. I'm giving you that's a very broad palette there.
No, we're watching the scaffold match. I don't care about good wrestling.
How great is it that we have actually managed now to go two straight weeks of like high stunt matches for 2007 and then within like 3 months of each other. So this is, look guys, just watch this. Watch this, listen to Getting Network's pod on this, and then come back here, rewatch this and understand that when I'm laughing about this match, it is in the most authentic, sincere way possible, because this is magic. This is all time. And it's nothing to do, really. As funny as the stunt bomb is, it's nothing to do with Sting and Vampiro. It's just the presentation in general and the fact that Scott Hudson actually claims we just watched Steve Borden kill himself on pay-per-view.
Look,
amazing.
We can laugh at this because, fortunately, Sting is alive after this. If, you know, if, God forbid, something worse happens, we would not be reviewing it. We would not be laughing at this. But Sting is alive. He's okay. He's in the WWE Hall of Fame. He still won't give Sean Ross Sapp an interview. So that's how he's okay. That's what matters, right? In fact, I still have this.
Oh, wow.
As the hat falls. Got him right here. Got the stinger.
There he is.
Yeah. This looks like the man who took the stunt bump, actually.
That physique is what Hogan expected him to look like at Starrcade 97, right? That's what he expected him to be, that big. But yes, you're correct. This is comedic because we know that, thankfully, Steve Borden and his kids were fine.
Yes.
Scott Hudson could sleep easy that night. The one thing I wanted to research, and I forgot to, was how long do you think Sting was out after this bump? Like 2 weeks, right, max?
Oh, I'll look this up right now, actually.
Because 2000 WCW, and I know, Jeremy, you're one of the only other people that's actually done that, like, exploration into madness. Things just happen.
Yes.
There's no sort of, like, people turn babyface and heel in a week. It's an insane time. People don't really grasp how insane it was. I hope this podcast is starting to shine a light on that. But I would assume he's back within no time. Even though they suggested he died here on pay-per-view. But we'll see.
I'm looking it up. My internet's a little bit slow right now. I will set up the next bit because you had a review for yourself. I don't even know how. Oh, it's because I was the whatever the award show was called was on during wrestling, and I didn't feel like watching wrestling on Wednesday. And Taylor Swift was back performing, and so I just put out there, if Denise Salcedo retweets this, Joe will watch the performance and review it. She performed Betty live. First live performance from the new album, Joe. What did you think of this song and this performance?
So, here's the truth about this, and this is going to make for a lame segment. I thought this could be quite funny because I thought I could come on here and be mean and get some dunks off, and it could turn into like a debate about Taylor Swift. But I'm going to be honest with you, I actually really enjoyed this, and I'm not doing a bit. Like, this was not what I expected. But I didn't realise that was the award. I didn't get what... I haven't listened to the new album. Shocking, I know. But is this the whole feel of the new album?
It's definitely a mix of a lot of different... It's an alternative album. Like, there's some sad songs. Okay. There's some more upbeat songs. But this song is actually, like, part of a trilogy from the new album. So this is from... This song was the perspective of a boy. And,
of James.
Yes, James. So you got that. A lot of people do not get that on the first listen, so I'm very proud of you. Yeah, but it's still, people just don't get it. People, there were the theories out there that, like, oh my God, is Taylor saying that she's bisexual because of this song and stuff? People don't always get it, Joe, but you got it. That's the layers that you know to pay attention to from watching years of wrestling.
Yes, of course. The no art prepares you for layers like wrestling. So James, this is from his perspective, but he appears to have wronged young Betty, right?
Yes.
That's what's happening here?
Yes.
So that's really all I've got. But I did know it was James, and I take that as a victory. I'm kind of startled by the fact that this is apparently like a success. I feel like I'm playing with house money.
This,
I have nothing else to add.
No, it's kind of amazing, like, when she puts out a new album. Like, you think the Bray Wyatt... This was the joke of Bray Wyatt is the Taylor Swift of wrestling. Because, like, you think the Bray Wyatt Twitter threads and Reddit threads are bad? The Taylor Swift threads are just outrageous when a new album comes out. Just outrageous.
Wow. So, like, in what way? Are we talking about who she's talking about or what she's...
Oh, yeah, who she's talking about. Like, there's a line in one song where she's... It's clearly about her current relationship, and she has the line of, like, I'll give you a child, and people are like, Taylor's pregnant. I knew it. She's pregnant. And it's just like, it could just be a foreshadowing. Like, she's saying she loves this person so much she would have his kid, but people are like, nope, she's pregnant. There's so much stuff that, like, people will tie together. And, like, she is very creative, and her mind works to where some of it is true, but the links fans will go to, like, tie stuff together and what she's talking about and stuff are just insane.
Well, the thing about, you know, the saying, which is lost on me now, but you know the deal about art can be perceived in any which way. People do like to push that to its fullest, and they really like to expand on that range. So I'm not surprised. I'm told that music, Jeremy, is quite popular. Have you thought about doing a music podcast? Because we have now discovered that film podcasts, there's not one in the world other than ours, right? So album listen could be a new deal, just saying.
Can we review the John Cena album?
100%.
Oh.
When are we going to do this? We're running out of days now. When are we going to do this? I'll happily do it.
No, it'll be like one of our Tuesday show. We'll take a break from the music show or the movie show and turn into... Look, I reviewed the Enzo album, and that album sucked. I reviewed the Leo Rush album.
You did. I remember that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I've reviewed musical albums that people... Swerve Scott, Isaiah Scott, has an album coming out in November. I want to review the John Cena album. Does anybody else have, like... an actual Mickey James? She has some songs, right?
Randy Savage has a...
Oh,
iconic,
yes. Randy Savage has an album. Oh, we're going to have to start doing album reviews now.
This is a new element to the brand. But I see the jokes on Twitter, Jeremy, and sometimes people will attempt to dunk on you, right, when the Taylor Swift deal comes up. And there'll be shot blockers around. People will come in and they sort of protect the room, make sure nothing happens. And I always respect that. I steer clear of all sort of Taylor slander. I don't know enough. But I did watch this and thought this could turn out to be a funny bit. And in the end, I was like, I quite like that song. It was good. I might actually listen to the trilogy now. So there's three songs on the new album that are about this one story, is what you're telling me.
Yes. The songs are August and Cardigan and then Betty. So if you're going to look up...
Next week, I will return for a full trilogy review.
Oh, my God.
I'm interested.
So I sold you on this bit that you were screaming about on Twitter last night. You're like, no, you got me doing this bet with the Sasha Banks theme. I'm not watching this Taylor Swift performance here. And now you've watched it, and next week we're going to get a full trilogy review.
Yeah. I was impressed. It was stripped back. I thought it was going to be kind of obnoxious, but it wasn't obnoxious. It was nice. So next week I'll do the trilogy, and then after that I'll do the full discography. So just, hey, that was a joke. Don't get carried away. But I would investigate. That's what I'm going to say. Is that a fair enough conclusion here?
Well, you've promised the people we're not doing the review next week, unless our guest is a fan of Taylor Swift. But
hey, that could be a truly heat check moment for our podcast.
It really
if he
could.
Comes on here and we're like, Taylor Swift, what do you think?
Okay. Let's get into that, because we talked, actually, real quickly, Sting was out a month. He came back at Bash at the Beach, was the next pay-per-view.
Okay.
That's when he came back. So, you know, they gave him a month. He fell to his death, and he was out for a month. That's fair.
They should have done a satellite interview with him, right? after the fire extinguisher stopped calling him down, Tony should have called him up. Okay.
Let's talk NBA to close out this podcast, because we always talk NBA. Last night, I don't know what happened. Joseph, Wednesday night, I have no idea what happened on the Twitter. Michael Thompson, former number one overall pick in 1978, I believe, two-time NBA champion, Lakers legend, He's a wrestling fan. If you go through his timeline, a lot of wrestling tweets on his timeline. And last night he tweeted that Eddie Kingston was as good on the mic as The Rock. He's a great trash talker. AEW has a bunch of great trash talkers. WWE does not, outside of MVP. I think you started this because you retweeted it. And then, of course, people on Twitter were getting mad about it. And you were like, we got to get Michael Thompson. You put it out on the universe. You said, we got to get Michael Thompson on the podcast. So, look, I called the play. Yeah, or you called the play, actually. You called the play in the huddle. You're like, here, look, you're the point guard, Jeremy. I need you to take over right now. I said, all right, Joe, I need you to set the screen. Let's run the pick and pop. We don't use it much. The Durant-Westbrook pick and pop. Don't use it as often as we could. But when we do, unstoppable. Absolutely unstoppable. I called for you to set the screen. You set the screen. The defense, they got to respect. They got to come out to you. If you pop, they got to worry about me. Take the little mid-range shot. Shot the shot. We got Michael Thompson. He's going to be on the show next week.
I need to stress because we're so excited. That is true.
Yeah.
That's really happening. I can't believe we're saying it. So I'm not a big deal on Twitter other than when I'm dunking. But I do think that I may have ruined his mentions because his quote tweets were all mutuals that were like mad and list. People were actually replying to Michael Thompson like, hey, man, like, Zelina Vega's pretty good. Like, imagine listening. What are you doing? Stop listening wrestlers to this, man. He's having fun. So, I thought it'd be funny. And he seemed to be interesting. So, I thought, maybe we do NBA talk here. So, like, maybe we could. He replied immediately. And then our good friend, Mr. Khan, was, like, all in. He was, like, his whole life was just about the Distraction podcast acquiring. Like, so, maybe he'll be a full-time. I don't know, man. This could be that when we get Brett Brown too, because he's going to reply soon, I think. So when we get him as well, we're going to have like an all-time group. We won't be a faction though, we're a family, right?
This is the thing, is like Joseph will put out there like, let's get Brett Brown, let's get Billy Donovan, let's do this person. I email these people, like I message them and be like, hey, you want to come on? I have nothing to lose either. They're going to say no and I fully expect them to say no. Or they'll actually come on the show and we'll talk to them. So, like, when he put out there, we got to get Michael Thompson on the podcast. Like, I was like, what? We have nothing to lose. I was looking for an email at first and there was nothing there. I was like, I'll just reply to him on Twitter. He's very active on Twitter. Like, he engages with a lot of people. And so I put it out there and we talked this morning through email and he's doing the show next week.
So, how do we play this fight, Jeremy? Do we just go straight into that particular tweet and then where that takes us, it will take us? I feel like that may be the play initially.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've got to do some NBA talk, but that tweet is so layered in the amount of questions you can ask just directly in response to that. Like, is he going to come on here and be like, been a big Eddie fan for a long time? And then Shikara tapes, I've worn him out. I watch him every
week. He tweets about Raw. He tweets about SmackDown. Because I went through his timeline last night to see just like how big of a wrestling fan he is and stuff. Because I was looking for other tweets to add to the article that I wrote. And like he tweets a lot. Like his entire timeline when he's not engaging with people. And he does that too. Like he'll respond to so many people. His entire timeline is just like basketball and wrestling. I was like, he should be the third member of this show.
Yes. Yes, like this is literally, it's perfect in every way, and it makes a lot of sense, but it also seems absurd that next week we are actually having an NBA champion on this. Like, and here's the deal, too. I get people again, like, you know, NBA champion is a unique term because you're talking about a squad of guys. Like, he played on one of the most iconic teams in the history of the league. Like, this is not a guy who's not seen nothing. He's like, yeah, I've gone with these nerds talking about wrestling. He could do much more cool things, much cooler things, sorry, than talk to us about Eddie Kingston's promo. So, this is going to be something. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm very excited. I know we play cool guy here, so I'm fired up, that is.
I don't play cool guy at all. I always find it hilarious. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I always find it hilarious when we achieve any type of like success with what we do. Like it's so funny to me. It's like, dude, we just want to talk about the dumb stuff in this sport. Like we'd rather be a basketball podcast, we'd rather review these terrible movies, and Michael Thompson is like, yeah, sure, I'll do your show, sure.
It could be that podcast could very much hinge on how the Lakers are doing by then though, right? Like, well, he's a big Lakers guy, man. Yes. We don't want him coming on here when they're 3-1 down against the Nuggets. That would be bad for all of us. You know?
Well, let's get into this, because we have a bet.
We do not.
We haven't established this. I pitched it on Tuesday, and then the Clippers, I'm going to slander the Clippers, by the way. We'll get to that. And then the Clippers lost Game 7. The original bet was supposed to be you get the Clippers or the field, and, well, the field won. So yeah. The new bet is you, Joseph, you get the Lakers or the field, and if the whoever you pick, if they win, then I will sing the Sasha Banks theme song. If your pick wins, or if my pick wins, you have to sing the Sasha Banks theme song. That's the bet.
See, the reason this rules is because your explanation to me is that if I duck this bet, I will look like a coward.
Yeah.
So I have three outcomes here. One is I look like a coward. The other is I get to see you singing the Sasha Banks. It's like, okay, great victory. Like, whoa, win. Because I know that has no effect on you. You will happily sing that song. So I'm looking at it, it's like, no, I'm not doing this bet. And here's the deal, because we're going to get into Clippers. This bubble is now terrifying me, dude. And like, while everything in my brain says, dude, take Lakers. Like, they've got this. I really think that. I am not putting had a dream I hadn't made it on the line. This league is insane. The Clippers, like, everything that I thought I knew suggested to me the Clippers were, like, not unbeatable, that's ridiculous, but, like, they were as strong a unit as you could have. And they had little cracks appear along the way, I get that. But good Lord, they didn't just lose a series, right? They had an all-time collapse. So my answer is, I will avoid that bet at every turn. And everyone watching this now, tweet me, you are a coward. And I will happily accept that as my punishment here. That's all I'm saying.
Oh my, I really thought...
I'm a coward.
Oh my God. I told Sean this idea, and he loved it. And he was like, I can't wait for this. And now you have backed out of it.
I am tweeting now, as we record this show, I am a coward without any That's how all in I am on being a coward out of those three options. Listen, man, the bubble is wild, okay? You got Tyler Hero, he's like an all-star. This thing's terrifying. I ain't going near it. Staying clear.
I'm disappointed.
Okay,
I'm stunned.
But
Sting just
now...
died.
Here's the deal, though, okay? I understand it's disappointing. I know that Sean has just cancelled our show.
You're fired. You are 100% fired.
Many things are about to transpire after that decision. But with that being said, you still have a victory lap to take.
Yes.
Because our friend Playoff Pete... Now, I do want to say, before you do this, because this is your play to make, but Kawhi deserves...
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I mean, that guy... He pulled some stuff last summer that was, like, insane. And when you do that, you have to win. You cannot blow a 3-1 and lead by 10 in every one of those games. So that's one thing. I don't want to, like, you know, do the, well, I'm letting him off thing. But we have an OKC fan here. There is one way to play this. So I'm giving you the ball. Go ahead.
Jeremy Grant was clearly the best player on OKC last season. He's the one going to the conference finals while Paul George and Russell Westbrook are headed to Cancun. Look, I enjoyed Paul George's time in Oklahoma City. He was MVP candidate last season until his shoulders got hurt. And if his shoulder just doesn't get hurt, you never know what could have happened. This is every year for the last 3 years with this guy. Ever since he's like, y'all ain't met Playoff P, huh? Just complete shit in the playoffs. Just absolute garbage. In the playoffs, you can blame shoulder injuries, you can blame Russell Westbrook, you can blame Doc Rivers, whatever you want to do. Just garbage in the playoffs. They had a 3-1 lead, up double digits. Paul George played great in like game 6, game 5. He was really good in one of those games. Game 7, another opportunity, completely wet the bed. I don't know if you read the stories of him, like Montrezl Harrell, wanting to like fight him. Because Paul George had like a couple... Oh, it was game 2. And Paul George had like a couple of turnovers. And George was like yelling at Trez. And they're going back to the bench. And Trez is like, you're always right. I get it. You're always right. And stuff. And like the Clippers had to like laugh and clap and stuff. To like make it seem like there was nothing going on. But it was like a full-blown argument between these two men. Dude, his post-game comments as well. Mm-hmm. Of like, we didn't have enough time to figure it out. Didn't have chemistry. No, our mindset wasn't that it was 1 year, it was championship or bust this year. Complete loser comments. All right, just complete loser comments. And that's the hat's fallen, Joe. The hat has fallen. I've shaken my head that the hat has fallen.
Yeah.
I would like Paul George. He does not make it easy.
So here's the thing with this team is, like, I have concluded that my take is this team was a group of losers convincing themselves that because they had one winner, they were now winners. And the result was, in the end, a bunch of losers stood around and watched while their winner failed to win. And that is, honestly, I know that sounded awful poetic, that is the only way I can... That team looked truly, like, terrified as the clock, it, like, evaporated on them, right?
With 5 minutes to go, it was within striking distance, especially when you have scorers like Williams, Kawhi, and George. Like, it was within striking distance.
Mm-hmm.
And then 5 minutes later, game time, they lost by 20. Like, just, and Jokic is throwing overhead passes up 16 with a minute left on the clock and stuff. Jokic just had no respect for these dudes. Like, that's a good point. Like, Paul George has never really won anything. Lou Williams has got a bunch of six-man awards. Trez has now a six-man award. Patrick Beverley, just the biggest talker. His claim to fame is he ruined OKC's season after the James Harden trade. Like, that's Patrick Beverley's biggest claim to fame. He's never really done anything
else. Though, he's not the worst. Marcus Morris is the worst on that team.
Oh, yeah. Because he's
at least Beverley, like, plays... I mean, he plays dirty, but, like... At least it matches his thing. Morris's whole thing is he's trying to convince you he's tough at every turn. It's like, big shot. Talking about big shot. Do you think Marcus Morris is making it? Because I don't.
Marcus.
I don't know, man.
Marcus Morris. And this is why, like, when I watched Boston last year and watched him, I was like, he's brutal.
Yeah.
Marcus Morris is Carmelo Anthony light, like super light. Like, he likes to do his little jab step mid range. Like, when he gets the ball, you ain't getting it back. He's posting, he's jab-stepping, he's shooting it. Yeah, Marcus Moore. They signed Reggie Jackson, like another loser. Reggie Jackson legitimately had the audacity to be like, I should be starting over Russell Westbrook. Like, this was a thing Reggie Jackson thought a few years ago. Did just... Yeah. And Kawhi, great player. He's got the rings. You can't knock him for that. There are playoff failures there. Like, the year after they won the title and then lost in seven to the Clippers when Chris Paul outplayed them, that's a mark on Kawhi to me. The Durant year, or the 2016, when the Spurs were the second best team, like, the Spurs were historically great that year, but no one remembered because the Warriors were 73 wins, even better historically great. And they were up 3-2 in that series, and they lost three straight. Like, that's an indictment on Kawhi.
Yes,
he completely choked away this series too.
Yeah, and it's also like you need that extra context, right? Like the way that he went about free agency. Like I don't want to do the generic like if this was LeBron deal, but like let's be real, if it was LeBron, like imagine.
LeBron, right? Like, it's insane. LeBron got slandered last year. When the Lakers didn't make the playoffs after, you know, he signed with them, they're like, oh, God, the West can't do it in the West. And look, the Lakers were a good team until LeBron got hurt in December or January the year before. He got hurt. It threw everything off. But, yeah, the way Kawhi recruited Paul George. Kawhi legitimately was like he recruited a bunch of different people. Paul George was the only person who just decided, oh, yeah, I'll join this guy. Because Paul George is a follower and not a leader at all. But, yeah, his whole hubbubaloo with how he got going to Los Angeles and everything. People have said this, and they're calling out Kawhi on his leadership. Like Duncan, Manu, Parker, they were the leaders of those Spurs teams.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like Kyle Lowry... It's pretty evident. Kyle Lowry was the leader of that Raptors team. They didn't have a leader in Los Angeles. Like they thought Kawhi was that person. It just doesn't appear to be the case.
Yeah, you need he's like your lead by example guy, and then you need the guy who like actually has the identity of the team. And I think they wanted that to be Beverley, which he's just never had.
Yeah, no.
Like, and like even if you're a big fan of his or whatever, like he's just not that guy. Because right? Kyle Lowry. He's nowhere near as good a player as Kawhi Leonard, but he's still an all-star player, right? Like, he can still take a big shot, make a big play. You're not putting more of Patrick Beverley's hands in the game. See, there's only so far... It's like with us when it's like, don't worry, guys, like, Tobias is our leader. It's like, oh, yeah, sure thing. Like, you have to, there has to be a balance between one of the best players at the very least. So here's the thing. Like, it's all well and good us laughing now. What do they even do? Like, Montrez can't come back because it's just, it doesn't work. The whole thing of, like, the two sixth men that neither of them can guard their man. Like, it's just, it doesn't work in playoff basketball. So, I don't know, sign and trade? Who are you getting for him? I have no clue what they do.
They could use Chris Paul. I don't know what they're giving up.
Point guard.
I don't know what they're giving up to get him, but they could use somebody like Chris Paul. So you're
saying you wouldn't take Landry Shamet in a second for Chris Paul?
We legitimately have like six of their draft picks for the next 6 years. They have no draft picks to even give us if they wanted to entertain that thought. Yeah, I think you've got to trade. Trez seems like the biggest one you would want to trade because him and Paul George, it doesn't seem like it works. But Lou Williams and Trez are such a good package deal that I don't know, like Lou Williams is streaky as it is. You lose some of his playmaking because I don't think he's a good playmaker to like anyone outside of Montrezl Harrell. I don't know what the Clippers do. I'd field offers on Paul George. I don't think you're getting anything. And I don't think they're actually going to do it, but I'd field something to see if there's something out there. But you gotta bring in a guy who actually has some like leadership skills. I don't think Kawhi's ever going to be that guy. And look, not everybody can do it. I get it. I don't think he's ever going to be that guy. And yeah, Patrick Beverley, this dude is saying the next 5 years belong to me, to Steph Curry. Like, dude, you're like, I was going to make a Draymond Green comparison. I'd rather have Draymond Green than Patrick Beverley.
Oh, 100%.
Like, Beverley's just, he's just a guy. Like, he's just an average point guard who has a reputation for being a good defender and is like a fine defender. But I really think he's just someone who barks a lot and doesn't have as much bite.
He's a less versatile Marcus Smart. That's my take. That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, way less. I would take Marcus Smart in a heartbeat over Patrick Beverley.
I have to say this. No one's still watching this podcast, but I love Marcus Smart. I know I shouldn't. I just can't help myself. So quickly, I know we're way long here, but just one question on the Clippers. I agree they need leadership, but stylistically, what's a bigger priority? An actual playmaker or a good defensive big man? What would you think? Would you prioritize?
I think Zubac can actually be a good defensive big man. Jokic is just a handful. Like, I think Zubac is actually good, and they should have played him a little bit more because those Trez minutes were just god-awful.
Doc can't help himself, man. He's like, yes, we have Kawhi and Paul George, but how about some Lou Will Montrez pick and roll? How about it, right? Like, it's just, no, I'm with you 100%.
I think, here's a trade for you. Neither team will do this. I think it'd be hilarious. Paul George for Russell Westbrook.
Good Lord, man. Good Lord. That would be... I mean, Paul George would certainly fit in on the Rockets, right? There'd be so many ways they could find ways to lose games. Like, they would just do it so consistently. But I don't know. I mean, there's going to be some hilarious, like, ideas that pop up around Paul George, but I agree with you. He's staying.
Yeah. Right?
Like, there's no way.
I think it would be hilarious if Kawhi, like, recruited this guy, got him there, and then they're going to have to sell him for pay. Dude, they traded Gallinari, who OKC might sign and trade, or even if they keep him, like, awesome. They traded Shea, who has got 10 years, hopefully, in OKC, 10 years or more. And then they traded, like, six first-round picks for Paul George just to go out in the second round. Like, just... Hey, good job. Oh, good job, Clippers.
I mean, I guess they did it on the assumption, like, well, we're going to win, and then Kawhi will be a Clipper forever. But it's like, dude, like, look at Kawhi. Kawhi doesn't care. Like, if 2 years in, this thing isn't going well, he's out. Like, he'll go happily. So, yeah, I have no clue. But I would not want to be a Clippers fan, and I say that as a Sixers fan. I would not want to be. Because it's just all hanging over them, right? Like, not only are they getting dunked on, like, the league is laughing at them. That's next level. Fans is one thing. The league laughing at you, that's tough.
Dude. The Lillard-McCollum tweets, that made my night. That was... And that's the thing when you talk as much as those guys is, like, you have got to back it up if you're going to talk. Like, that. This is why people didn't like Russell Westbrook, is, like, the dude just yapped and yapped and yapped, and then his shortcomings were his shortcomings. But at least people with Russell Westbrook, even Lillard, they will respect him enough to be like, you know, he competes, he goes out there, he tries hard, he's never going to give up on the team or anything like that. Like, George and these guys just were mentally defeated and checked out very quickly. Like, even in the game, I guess it was game 5 of the Rockets, people were still saying Westbrook is still playing hard. Like, he sucks, but he's still playing hard. These guys, they were just cooked.
Yeah, it's not a coincidence the quietest guy on the team is the only one that's ever won, right? Like, I mean, that speaks itself. The rest of the guys were just hoping that he'd pull them there, and it didn't work out. So, yeah, the Clippers, Clippers fans are a tough out, man. I don't know. I mean, I understand it's our duty as the distraction to give you your chance to do the victory lap, and it certainly needs discussing. But, man, I feel for the one Clipper fan who listens to this for wrestling talk and is like, jeez, I can't escape. I can't escape. Wherever I look, I get it.
Well, yeah. We'll get Michael Thompson on here next week, and I'm sure if the Lakers are still around and doing well, I'm sure he won't have any dunks on the Clippers at all. So.
No, I'm sure he loves the Clippers. Yeah. I'm sure he hasn't got any comments on that. Yeah, good point. I can't believe we have Michael Thompson on here. How have you done this? This is incredible.
Point guard shit only, Joseph. Point guard shit only. I'm
it
vague.
Sure is.
We'll be back on... I don't think we have a show on Saturday, actually. I will be back on Saturday night streaming WWE 2K Battlegrounds. That'll be... I have no idea what time on Saturday night. Probably like 10, 11 o'clock or something. So if you want to watch me play 2K Battlegrounds, hey, come check it out on the Fightful YouTube. We'll be back on Tuesday. We're reviewing My Dad is a Heel Wrestler, starring Hiroshi Tanahashi. So that'll be an interesting show as we read...
Yes.
As we watch a movie. We'll be back on next Thursday with Michael Thompson talking wrestling and basketball. Joseph, where can the people follow you on Twitter?
So I have some news bulletins, Jeremy. JoeHolbert5 is the Twitter. There is a day left on a poll on my... It's a pinned tweet on my profile. I'm bringing back a series I did many years ago on Fightful called The Report Card. And I will be covering either Raw, SmackDown, or Dynamite. So you can vote on which one. Raw is very far behind, thankfully. So I think SmackDown still has a chance. It's in second round. So do that. Another one at Dunk on this week. I want to reiterate what I said earlier. Get a network podcast. Check those guys out. They're tremendous. And anyone else that I've complimented, they're doing cool stuff, right? Andrew Thompson's doing cool things again. I've said he's good already. So, like, the usual. I have nothing going on. Oh, I do have one more thing going on. I do critical reviews now, Jeremy. I'm an artist. Usos versus Harper and Rowan, I've done, like, a 2,000-word breakdown of. Check that out on my... That site that I have. Go on my Twitter. It'll be there. That's all I need to say.
Your tagline is still artistic analyst on the little video that people can see here. I voted, full disclosure, I voted for Dynamite on your poll. I was very sad that NXT was not included. I would have voted for NXT as a joke, but...
Of course you would.
I almost thought about voting for Raw, but I was like, I'm not going to be that mean because I don't want Raw to win for your sake. You should not have to go through that. You can follow me on Twitter at JeremyLambert88. Andrew Thompson will hopefully be on the show not this Tuesday, the following Tuesday, the movie review show. He's going to review a movie with us. We'll talk more about that next Tuesday, or this upcoming Tuesday. So Andrew's doing cool stuff. He's got a podcast over at Post Wrestling that debuts not this weekend, next weekend. Follow him, subscribe to his YouTube channel. All our friends are doing cool shit, man. If you listen to a Taylor Swift song, the opening track of Folklore, there is a line that says, I heard you're doing cool shit, or I had a dream you're doing cool shit. And I like to use that line. Like, all of our friends are doing cool shit. Keep doing cool shit, everybody.
Yes, it's strange because I had a dream I hadn't made it. So that's all I've got. That's all I've got.
All right, everybody. We will be back on Tuesday.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.